Two straight wins and some improved shooting has Heat fans hoping things have turned around, but is it real or just a regular season mirage? Plus, Jimmy Butler and the Heat have been dragged through the media lately, and just in time to kick off March Madness, we reveal our Heat culturist bracket. Who has represented the Heat best over their 35-year history? Rowan Nocherty of Sports Illustrated joins on today's special episode of Locked on Heat.
You are Locked on Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily podcast on the Miami Heat. I'm Wes Goldberg, here with David Vermeil. Thanks so much for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day and for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on YouTube. Today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn. To get started, we are thrilled to welcome Rohan Nadkarni to the show. Rohan, you do a great job covering the NBA for Sports Illustrated. You grew up in the mean streets of Coral Springs, and you're always one of our favorites around here. Nobody better to talk to about how the media has covered Jimmy Butler lately. We're going to reveal our culturist Heat culture bracket later, but let's start with a segment we're calling Glass Half Full. The Heat have won five of their last seven games, including Wednesday's blowout win over the Memphis Grizzlies. Ron, I'm going to give you a second just to think about where you want to go, because, and I'm just going to start with my glass half full take. And that's just the 3-point shooting, not only because it's led to wins, obviously, but also because I was just getting sick of watching the Miami Heat brick 3-pointers all season long. And this is just a way more fun way to watch basketball. So what about you, your glass half full take on the Heat lately?
You know, first of all, thank you for having me back on the show. Really took you guys a while to let me talk there. Always fun to sit through a solid, 45 seconds of the Locked on Heat graphic just bouncing around the screen.
That was professionally done.
Yes, clearly. No, in all seriousness, I think this team has actually looked, for the most part, pretty good since the second half of the Knicks game, that comeback. Obviously, they lost on that improbable Julius Randle three. I think for the most part, the team has looked a lot better since then. And things are generally looking upward. I mean, the Magic loss is a tough loss. At the same time, Orlando's been one of those frisky teams. They've knocked off good teams this year. You know, they've knocked off Boston in Boston. That was the second night of a back-to-back for Miami. So even though it was a tough loss, the Cleveland games, both Cleveland games were close. They had a chance to win both of those games. So in general, I don't know if I'm supposed to point to one specific thing here like you did. That wasn't really described to me in the outline you sent via text a couple minutes before the show. But I would say overall,
Ron bought notes today. He brought lots of notes on the show outline.
Since the second half of the Knicks game, I think they've generally looked like a more competent team. And you mentioned the shooting. It's definitely made a difference. I guess if I have to point to one thing that I've caught my eye a little bit the last few games, that would be Kyle Lowry, who obviously returned. During that Magic game, I thought he had a great stretch against Memphis last night. He's the kind of person that can help them keep some lineups afloat when one of Bam or Jimmy is sitting. And I thought he made a huge difference in that Grizzlies game. So, yeah, I guess I'll repeat it for like the 10th time. But I think generally, since things looked really low and they were down, I think 19 to the Knicks at halftime, yeah, I think they've looked pretty good since then.
You think that halftime was the turning point for them?
I think I'm willing to say that, yes.
Okay. Well, you just did. Great. David, what about you? What's your half glass full?
Same as Rowan. Very good. I'm just curious. We never really talked about this. What was your overall take on the team before that Knicks, you know, comeback or whatever? I mean, again, they wound up losing that particular game, but overall, like, what's your sense of this team at this point in the season? Were you as frustrated? Because we've heard it all. We've talked about, we've run through the full gamut of emotions on the show here. Some ups, some downs, some frustration. I've been generally optimistic all season long. Wes, not as much, but I was kind of broken recently, even by in the Utah Jazz win, because it was just frustration boiling over on my end. But what's your overall sense of this Heat season?
You know, it's a team that on paper, even though it's not great, I think on paper you expect it to be a little bit better than what they are. But ultimately, they are, you know, I was just looking at some stats today. They have like a worse net rating than the Washington Wizards, yep, than the Atlanta Hawks, than the Los Angeles Lakers. And in some senses, it's remarkable that they even have the record that they have. And I think my overall take on this team is, while I believe they should be better, especially when we have Jimmy and Bam, you know, Jimmy's maybe having the best offensive season of his career, at least efficiency wise. Bam is definitely having the best offensive season of his career, even with the slump recently. It's not been close. You think the team should be a lot better, but it's they are who they are. That's really my take, is they're a team that has to claw to fight and scratch and fight to win every single game that they win. The Memphis game, obviously, I'm not the first person to point this out, the first double-digit win in almost 2 months. At the end of the day, as much as we can sit here and be like, they have this, this, and this, this team should be better. I've been impressed with Caleb Martin. I think Haywood Highsmith, I know he's been a source of frustration for people. He had good minutes in the Memphis game. He's had some nice moments this year. But at the end of the day, like, they can't escape the type of games they've played in and what the stats show on paper, which is that this is unfortunately an average team. That's just my you can't argue anything else at this point.
Yeah. This is an average team that at best has a chance to maybe grab the sixth seed if the Knicks continue to slide or if Brooklyn completely falls apart. But we're looking at a team that has like an 80% chance of making the play-in tournament, which means they have a 20% chance of making it into one of those top six seeds. So not impossible. There's a chance, but that's kind of what we're looking at. And Cleaning the Glass has this stat about, like, you know, you take the net rating and you compare that to what wins that should produce. Mm-hmm. And the Heat are basically, they're five games over 500 as we're talking now, but Cleaning the Glass has them pegged as basically a 500 team. So they're outperforming their net rating. And I think that's mostly, to your point, that's because of the clutch games. And they're winning these clutch games where, you remember earlier in the season, they were losing a lot of these clutch games. They've been winning more often than not in those instances. And so that's a credit to Jimmy Butler, Bam, Spo, and all that stuff. But this is, you look on paper, top heavy, you know, they got the names, they've got Jimmy, they got Bam. They have Tyler Hero, depending on how you feel about him. But outside of that, like, this is not a better roster than the Atlanta Hawks. It just isn't. You know, you get past the top two guys. Like, it's just not. And so the fact that the Heat are doing what they're doing, I think, is a credit to the people that are on the court and kind of a bad look on the front office, to be honest. But we've talked a lot about that. In terms of glass half empty, David, let's hear from you. What do you think? What's that glass half empty version of this 5 out of 7 stretch?
Oh, that they're going to find a way to not be able to continue this, you know, this trend. I'm not sure how realistic it is. You know, there's just too much of a larger sample size in terms of the regular season and their bad shooting and some of the mistakes and some of the role players not producing at key moments. And I don't know how sustainable or likely it is that they'll be able to maintain or even continue to improve the way they have over the last few weeks. So that's my concern.
Your glass half empty is just your personal not trust in the team.
Yeah, basically.
Fine. I'm okay with that. That's fair. Rohan, what about you?
I mean, it would have to be the defense, because as the shooting has kind of coincided with a slip in their defense. And I think a lot of people would say they put Kevin Love in the starting lineup. I mean, Love doesn't play a ton of minutes. I was just looking at the lineup stats earlier today. The defense hasn't even been awful with Love in the starting five, or at least that lineup's minutes in particular. So it really just kind of falls on everybody there, I think. I don't think it's fair to put it on one player's insertion into the rotation. But yeah, I think my issue is, one, their defense has slipped considerably as the offense has gotten better. And two, I don't know that they know who their best five are yet.
Yeah.
You know, Victor Oladipo didn't play against the Grizzlies. I could have given you Spo's response to the questions about it. You know, it's just, you know, I'm surprised surprised you didn't drop in a whatever it takes. It's all hands on deck. You know, there was
next
always going
to
be the, yep, there was always going to be the, I talked to Vic. Things are changing day to day, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, with this, first of all, one of the crazy things going back to this, the injuries and the weirdness of this Heat season, the Love starting five is already the Heat's second most used lineup this season.
That's
it's only
wild.
Played 11 games. Love, Butler, Adebayo, Vincent Hero, their second most used lineup, -1.1 net rating. But the offense has been a bigger issue with that group than the defense. So yeah, I just think defensively they've slipped. And beyond that, I have a hard time knowing who their best five are going to be on a given night.
They're allowing roughly 4 more points every 100 possessions than they did before, adding Kevin Love and kind of switching things up in their rotations and stuff like that. To your point, it's not all on Kevin Love. He plays 2 8-minute stints a half. Those are his minutes. It's not a big deal.
Also, it's been fun watching him. How about that? It's kind of fun when he's on the floor, huh?
Yeah. I mean, Luke Babbitt 2.0. I'm here for it. Let's go. Like, it's fine. But that's how they're using him, but it's fun. The outlet passes and all that kind of stuff is good. He's better than Luke Babbitt. No, I was going to say the same thing that you said, Ro. The closing five, I'm not sure what it is. I don't think Spo knows what it is. If Kyle Lowry could be a part of that, great. I don't know that he's going to be. I feel pretty good about the top four. I know that it's going to be Jimmy, Bam, Caleb, and Tyler most nights. But outside of that, I'm not really sure who it's going to be. But plenty of time to figure that out. So mostly half full, it felt like. 5 out of 7.
Did you say plenty of time to figure that out?
11 games left.
That's not plenty of time. Oh, we're still doing the half empty thing.
I just think empirically it's false that there's.
That's fair. That's a fair criticism. No, that's should that's, be, should. That's fair criticism.
Yeah. At game 71, yeah, game 71. Know, you probably should I, have an I know awareness. What you
mean. It feels like there's more time left in the regular season, but the reality is there's not. I know what you mean. I looked at the schedule and I had the similar thought. Oh God, there's only a few games left. Which I think there's a feeling that they have time to figure it out, but realistically, I don't know that they do.
This is kind of the team, but they've shot 40% from three over the last 7 games. To David's point, I have no idea if that's going to sustain or if they're just going to shoot 15% the next 3 games straight. Like, I have no idea what to think about this roster. I will say this. I don't even care about the defense that much. This was a bad team. This was an
How
average
dare
team.
You?
This was, I know, right? We're going to do a Heat culturist bracket later, and
I just lost. You just lost. Yeah.
I just lost in my matchup. But, no, I just, like, that team sucked. It was not fun to watch. Like, it was just a sucky watch. It was just brick threes, try to get steals. The defense was a little bit smoke and mirrors anyway because it was so reliant on turnovers more so than getting stops. Yeah. And so, like, I don't care. This team is winning more than it did before, and the defense has slipped not to, like, bottom five in the league. It's still league average. It just slipped from, like, sixth in the league to average. And I just think that was going to happen eventually anyway. Because I didn't really think that the defense was propped up on some shaky stuff anyway. So this team is more fun to watch. And I would rather it be more fun to watch. Even if they start losing, I'd rather it be more fun to watch. That's where I'm at.
It's tough because it's been so frustrating. And I'm sure you could do this with any team. And you could go back and do this with all the Heat's wins as well, I bet. But if you just think about some of the games they've lost this year. Remember the Washington game? Maybe still my favorite game of the season in November with Jimmy and Bam out, and it's Kyle Lowry, the Orlando Robinson coming out party. They have a lead late in the fourth quarter. Kyle Kuzma hits the crazy three. They lose by 1 point in overtime. They lose a few nights later that Minnesota game. Very close. They lost in Memphis when Memphis was missing all of its good players.
Yeah, we talked about this in a recent episode because Ira wrote a piece about it recently. There was like a particularly stinging loss. I think it was a Magic loss. After that Magic loss in overtime, he wrote about like the worst losses of the season. Yeah. Those were all in there. They've lost to Charlotte twice.
The
not great.
The Knicks game and on the Randall three. This team is so close to being a 40-win team, and somehow it's like they have a top 5th, like they have like they'd be fourth place in the West or something stupid. Like,
yeah,
it's just been a stupid, frustrating season. Like, and it's especially frustrating because of how good Jimmy and Bam have been. Sorry, I know I'm taking us off the rails here, but
no, we're gonna talk about it. We're going to talk about Jimmy Butler next, and specifically the media coverage of him. Maybe it's too negative, or certain people out there. With agendas, we're going to talk about all of that next. But first, David, tell the listeners about our sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Nissan's Most Electric Player of the Week, which is brought to you by the all-new, all-electric 2023 Nissan Ariya. Look, we've talked about it. We kind of hinted at one of the players that's been adding a boost lately. No, it's not Kevin Love. I think that Kyle Lowry is the most electric player of the week. 2 solid games for him this week, and he's just providing a little bit of a spark there. I think he's been great in fourth quarters. I asked Jimmy about it after the Utah win, and he liked what he's providing, the leadership, the accepting of his role. But you don't have to accept anything when it comes to the Nissan Ariya, because that car is a beautiful combination of power, fierce, elegance and design. And it's just a great, great vehicle. Go check it out if you haven't. I haven't seen nearly enough of them out on the road, but I think that's going to start to change lately. Just like we're going to see more of an improved role, or an increased role rather, from Kyle Lowry. The 2023 Nissan Ariya packs pin-to-your-seat power and premium intelligence all in one EV. The all-new, all-electric 2023 Nissan Ariya. The EV for people who love to drive just like you, Ron. Shop now at NissanUSA.com.
You guys got a Nissan sponsorship?
Do you like to drive?
Look at you guys go. That's a heavy hitter. That's not, you know, that's not like, I don't know, some kind of random cell phone company.
Right.
That
you we didn't settle for
your
Fiat.
Burner phone.
Yeah, we got Nissan, yeah, baby. That,
Nissan is legit. Which one of you got the free car?
David did.
Yeah, I did.
David got awesome. David's driving the Nissan. Locked On Heat is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Make sure you subscribe. All right, we're going to reveal the Coltriest Heat culture bracket in a minute, but I want to talk about the media coverage around Jimmy Butler lately. Reports of him playing Nickelback in the locker room, being spun in some sort of punishment. Last night, he was playing John Mayer in the locker room. Is that a coded message? We'll see. Rumors about Donovan Mitchell not wanting to play with him. Rohan, so glad that you're on the show today, because you are kind of our national mole, so to speak. You're the guy. Wow. You're the one at SI. You're the national media guy. What have you made of the way that Jimmy Butler has been covered recently, especially while he's playing the best basketball of his season and the Heat are starting to win some games here?
Well, I wouldn't get too caught up in kind of Nickelback gate. I think that was like, there was like, I think sometimes we can very easily make the mistake, and we're all guilty of this, is like conflating one tweet that's going viral with that being reflective of overall media coverage. Yeah. I don't think that because one of these accounts was like, Jimmy played Nickelback as a punishment, and then, you know, the joke will always travel further than the fact, right? It was just such an easy thing for people to riff on that it creates some legs on the internet, but I don't think is indicative of the way Jimmy Butler is being covered by the media. I think there's a, you know, some outlets kind of spinning that Nickelback thing as a certain type of story, but for the most part, I don't really think it's a big deal. And I don't think, as far as I know, listen, I don't speak for all of Sports Illustrated. As far as I know, Sports Illustrated has not done a Jimmy is listening to Nickelback as a punishment story. I do think what I would say about the Jimmy Butler coverage is, and this goes back to how poorly the team has played, is he's being ignored. He's having a fantastic season that's being ignored. Again, I mentioned his efficiency, what he does on both sides of the ball, the advanced metrics, kind of these catch-all advanced stats. But even if you just watch him play, he's been, at worst, I'd say, a top 15 player in the NBA this season. You could probably make a case for top 10 if you wanted to. Again, considering
I was looking at what my like hypothetical MVP ballot would be, and in some order it's Embiid, Jokic, and Giannis in the top three. And then I think I had like Tatum at four. And then to me, number five was wide open because of the Luka injury and just sort of the stuff going on with the Mavericks right now that they might just be in the play-in tournament. And you can make an argument that Jimmy Butler could be fifth place on MVP ballots based on the way he's playing. And you mentioned the advanced stats. Like, they love Jimmy Butler. And now the raw stats are starting to back that up too.
For sure. And I think what I would say about the media coverage is it's getting ignored because of how bad the team is. And I don't think that it's anyone doing anything maliciously, but because the Heat have been so frustrating, because it seems like anytime they start gathering momentum, they start losing. Like, they've won 5 of 7. Would any of you be shocked if they somehow lost back to back in Chicago and Detroit?
Not at all.
This weekend? I don't think anyone would be surprised. It's what they've basically done all season. I think they hit like a high watermark, 32-25 in February, promptly lost 4 or 5 in a row. That's just the kind of season they've been having, and it's a disservice to Jimmy because he has been so good, and it's not being talked about because no one takes the team as a threat. No one takes the team seriously as a threat. It would, at this point, it would be surprising if they made the second round of the playoffs, which is obviously a disappointment coming off a conference finals berth last year. So to me, I look at the coverage of Jimmy, you know, these kind of, it's kind of like that moment's going to stick out because it's funny and people can joke about it, but it just shows how much people are not understanding the kind of season he's having because of how poorly the team's played.
Yeah, I just can't imagine how that would change, though. Like, Jimmy is such a polarizing figure, even outside the context of this season. And I still think that there is a lot of lasting vitriol from his exit from Minnesota and Philadelphia. And I think that any sign of weakness or any chink in the armor regarding the Miami Heat is enough to just kind of say, oh, there's Jimmy, you know, again, doing Jimmy things, because everybody seems like they're just waiting for the opportunity to bang on him. And then they're kind of reminded every playoff, oh yeah, wait, Jimmy Butler might be one of the best players in the world. And then they go back to hating him again. You know, they love watching him in April and May, but not so much during the regular season months. And it's just, I don't know how they would change that. I don't think the Heat could have done enough to change that overall. I don't know. I resist calling it a narrative, but look, even last year, top seed in the Eastern Conference, and they went into the playoffs with everybody saying, well, they're not really going to do much. You know, maybe we'll see what Jimmy Butler is, because of course there was the stigma from the previous season where they had gotten swept by the Milwaukee Bucks. So I don't know how that would change. I'm not sure how that conversation about Jimmy would differ from what it's been.
I do think the conversation has shifted slightly in his favor. I think his finals run did a lot for kind of, again, for lack of a better phrase, image. I think that the finals run helped.
Michelob Ultra commercials are nice, but I don't know that anybody thinks of, oh, sweet warm Jimmy, though.
I mean, he himself would tell you his personality has stayed the same, right? Like when I did my Jimmy story after the, but in terms of it validated his methods, right? I think his methods were validated by that finals run. And I think that what he did in the playoffs last year also earned him that reputation as this is a guy who you can win with in the playoffs. I think there's a chance we're going to look at Jimmy as one of those great stars who never won a title, unfortunately, if that's how his career ends up. But he's kind of possibly treading in that direction. Again, we'll see what the team does this summer. But it's not that I think people look at it.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt. But please. That's interesting. Like what is the legacy of Jimmy Butler like 20 years from now? Oh, Jimmy, great player, a real dick though. Like nobody wants to play with him. Nobody, I mean, like he pushed his teammates, he dribbled too loudly in the Orlando bubble. He played Nickelback.
He's like, gonna that's age what well. We're all gonna remember. These stories are gonna age well.
They're gonna age well.
It's like a legacy thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I can sense this frustration with you, David, but I don't think that I'm sensing it the same way. I think, and I know again that the Orlando walk off, but even that, like, I don't think that caught on nationally in any way. Like, I don't think anyone is looking at Jimmy right now as they did in Minnesota or Philly as a malcontent or someone
because he won, you know, because of that finals run, because of what he did in the conference finals last year. Yeah. When everything was going down with Kobe, what happened? He won a championship and everybody's like, well, worth it. Mamba mentality. Let's do it. Like, and you brand it. And Michael Jordan was a jerk, but he won titles. Like, and I'm not necessarily comparing Jimmy Butler to Kobe or Michael Jordan, but when you win, it's okay. Chris Paul has been in the league winning forever. Nobody wants to play with him for more than 3 years, right? But he's just everywhere he goes, he wins. Draymond Green, heart and soul of the Warriors when they're winning. Like nobody wants, he punches his teammates in the face, but his status is such that, okay, you deal with it because of the greatness that he can bring onto the court. So I do think that that's the overall tone in the Jimmy Butler coverage, but I do wonder if people just don't care about it. To Rohan's point, they don't care about it during the regular season, whether or not the Heat are the number one seed or the number eight seed, because they're just kind of conditioned to wait until the playoffs. What I find so interesting is I don't think Jimmy Butler wants to be warm and fuzzy. I think he likes his image being what it is. What's interesting is that the media, I do sense a little bit of negativity, at least locally around Jimmy Butler, where the only difference is how many games the Heat are winning. Jimmy Butler is the same. Jimmy Butler is a rock. Jimmy Butler is the same. If anything, he's better than he was last year.
Yeah.
Nothing has changed about Jimmy Butler. It's just the context around him.
He's doing what people wanted him to do in the regular season last year, which is take over more often. Yeah, I'll echo Esther that I think nationally they're just not really a story. And last year, to be honest, as improbable as they were as a one seed, I understood the skepticism because of their half-court offense. Yep. Because of frankly how dominant Boston was for a 4 or 5 month stretch of the regular season, I kind of understood the skepticism, and like, we don't need to relitigate the Heat's 2022 season. Like, I think they would have beaten Philadelphia, but they also did play an injured Joel Embiid. That made a huge difference. We can admit that. We're all,
of course,
normal people here. So, I do think that nationally, I think the conversation is around Jimmy shifted enough. This is about like the Donovan Mitchell report that Ethan had. I think that I certainly don't doubt Ethan's reporting. But it's also vague enough that we don't know what that means exactly. Does that mean Donovan Mitchell doesn't think he'd be a good fit next to Jimmy Butler? Does that mean Donovan Mitchell wanted to be in a position where he'd have the ball in his hands more?
It was a lot more complicated than what people, not necessarily what Ethan reported, but when people spun that, like, Donovan Mitchell is not playing for the Miami Heat because of Jimmy Butler. No, Donovan Mitchell is not playing for the Miami Heat because he wasn't a free agent and he didn't demand a trade. And people are like, well, he didn't demand a trade because he didn't want to play with Jimmy Butler. No, Donovan Mitchell didn't demand a trade at all. Like, he didn't demand a trade at all. And it's working out for him in Cleveland right now. But if it was up to him, he would not have gotten traded to the Cavaliers because superstars don't force their way to Cleveland. That never has ever happened.
Right. So I saw that report and I'm like, I don't have any reason to doubt it, but it could mean several things. I don't think it means guys around the league look at Jimmy Butler and say, I don't want to play with that guy. And I know this is different, but like PJ Tucker loved playing with Jimmy Butler. You know, there's a lot of
examples. Yeah, still
like a lot of examples of people who do want to play with him. I know Bam is when I did my Bam story and he was like, Jimmy was scoring, 40 whatever points. Like, why would I not keep giving him the ball? Like, that's our guy, Goran Dragic, telling me like in the bubble when Jimmy came and picked him up. They're obviously good friends. So I never looked at that report as like he's worried. That could mean so many things. I mean, Don Mitchell's in a point in his career where he's rightfully earned the opportunity to be the lead star of a great team. He should want that opportunity. There's no reason he should look at himself as the third option on a team or second option on a team. Why would he subject himself to that at this point in his career? So to me, when I saw that report, I didn't think much of it only because I'm like, there are so many ways to read that. And obviously Donovan himself has come out and kind of tweeted refuting it to a degree. Again, there's just so much there that we don't know, but again, the only kind of quote unquote negativity I hear about Jimmy, and I don't even know if this is negativity because I think that there are ways to argue for it, but are the local people who will say trade him, or even the national people who say trade him are not saying trade him because he's a bad player. You know, there are a lot of arguments for the Jimmy trade thing that I know you guys even talked about it on a recent episode more thoroughly. So I'm not.
Where do you stand on this?
Well, can we put a pin in that? Can we put a pin in that?
Yeah.
All right, so let's.
I will say where I stand on it, though. Don't worry, right, David.
We'll come out the other side with that. Plus, you mentioned some names there: Rohan, PJ Tucker, Goran Dragic, Jimmy Butler. Those guys bleed Heat culture, but who bleeds more Heat culture than anybody else? We'll tell you when we reveal our bracket next. But first, David, tell listeners about our sponsor.
Today's show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Getting to know yourself can be a lifelong process, especially when we're always growing and changing. Therapy. It's all about deepening your self-awareness and understanding. I've got a friend who had an experience and wanted to go to seek some help. I told him about BetterHelp because obviously they were a sponsor of the show, and he has found a therapist that he feels comfortable with, and it's been an eye-opening experience just after a couple of sessions. And I think that's a wonderful thing because therapy is always an option. There's a stigma about it that doesn't necessarily need to exist anymore, and I think people understand that, but BetterHelp is helping you get the treatment you need. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be super convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge if you need to. So discover your potential with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/lockedonNBA today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lockedonNBA.
Locked On Heat's on Twitter, Instagram. You can email us, lockedonheat@gmail.com. Rohan, where do you stand on the topic of trading Jimmy Butler?
I think that there are other organizations who would consider it because there's a way to build in the NBA, right? And that's building through acquiring draft picks, whether that's use them or trade them. And you can look at the age difference between Jimmy and Bam. Could look at Jimmy's age and say, how many years can he keep playing at this level? The money owed to him on his contract. There are cogent arguments for it, especially with the place the Heat will be in this summer. Like, if we really want to get into it, Lowry is going to be making a lot of money. Duncan still has multiple years left on his contract. Hero's extension kicks in. Bam's already playing under his extension. Those are five guys right there who are getting paid a lot of money for a team that we've just talked about is average, is mediocre. Are they going to re-sign Gabe Vincent and Max Strus? you might say, let them walk. They're not that good. But you're already capped out, so how are you replacing them? Even if they haven't been that good, they're soaking up
another
major
undrafted
minute.
Player.
Yeah, it's like, do you get another undrafted player? I mean, you can just replace them with a minimum guy. Your exceptions are only going to get you so far. Listen, they were in this place before, and I know Heat fans will get a little cocky about it. You know, Zach Lowe had that statement, the Heat are maybe in the worst position of any franchise in the NBA, and they end up getting Jimmy Butler and making the finals. The Jimmy Butler thing happened at the perfect moment for the Heat in terms of a star wanting out, his acrimonious relationship with the Sixers, and the fact that the asking price for a player of his caliber has changed a lot over the last few years. Like, the real reason the Heat couldn't get Donovan Mitchell, who would they have traded that the
exactly
Jazz would have been remotely interested in?
Exactly.
Because, you know, and I saw...
They weren't beating that Cavs offer. They weren't beating whatever the Knicks had on the table, period.
Certainly not. I mean, they aren't one of those teams that can say, here are three first-round picks, two swaps, and four young guys. You know, Hero is I don't know how teams value him around the league because his defense is an issue for any contender in the playoffs.
Yeah, would he have taken the same leap that Lauri Markkanen has in Utah?
Yeah, exactly. Who knows? And, you know, those things are all complicated. So I personally don't think the Heat should trade Jimmy Butler. I think Jimmy and Bam can be the best two players on a title team. I think they're two top 20 players in the NBA when they're at their very best. And you have to find a way to make that work. But the Heat have just put themselves in a large part of this because Mickey Arison doesn't want to pay the tax. I saw some Heat fans saying PJ Tucker is lying. He wouldn't have come back to Miami. PJ Tucker absolutely wanted to stay in Miami. Mm-hmm. There's no question about it. He got offered the biggest contract of his career at age 37. The Heat could have matched it, but they don't want to be hard capped. They don't want to pay the tax. So the Heat keep backing themselves into a corner in terms of how to build this team. And that's what's creating the issue. That's why the conversation about trading Jimmy Butler exists among some national media people, because
it's a viable path to get out of mediocrity, which is where they are now. And it's not option A. And I've said this before, and I won't relitigate it, but it's not option A. It's not option B. It's probably not option C, but it is an option. It's D, E, G, whatever you want to say it, but it's got to be on the table this offseason, depending on where things go. The other thing I'll say about the Miami Heat is, and I made this point the other day, you can make the argument that their roster has gotten worse since the bubble run to the finals. Like, the supporting cast around Jimmy Butler, you remove the development from Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo because that was going to happen. Like, just the other players around those guys has gotten worse. And that's not a great job by the front office. And to your point, they only got Jimmy Butler because Jimmy Butler forced his way out of Philadelphia, tried to direct himself to Miami, and the Heat traded Josh Richardson and some draft picks for him. And that was it. That was obviously, in retrospect, a complete steal. And the Heat have been hoping for that sort of scenario to play out again. But hope is not a strategy. Hope is not a team building strategy. And it seems to be what Miami's team building strategy is right now. And so if you're frustrated as a fan of what this front office has done, I think it's warranted. It doesn't mean that Pat Riley is washed or asleep or whatever. It just means that you could be critical of what has happened over the last 3 years, because I certainly have been. That said, we just mentioned Pat Riley. It is time for the culturist Heat culture bracket. So here's the idea. Everybody on this bracket, it's not the best player, coach, whatever. It's got broadcasters on it. We're very excited about this. Who embodies Heat culture the most? What is Heat culture? That's kind of the fun in all this. We get to debate it. So let's just go ahead and reveal the first round of our first region, the Schenectady region. Number one seed, Pat Riley versus the number 32 seed, PJ Tucker, the one we just talked about. PJ, short-lived stint in Miami, but embodied everything about Heat culture while he was here. Pat Riley is Pat Riley. I think this one's pretty simple, guys.
Yeah, it's Pat. Are we doing this whole bracket today?
We're just gonna do the first we're just gonna do this first round. We're not gonna go all the way through. So what we're gonna do, third segment every day. We're gonna try to get to this every day between now and whenever, however long it's gonna take. We're gonna do another round of each region every day, third segment of the show. So a reason for our listeners to keep tuning in until the third segment every day.
All right, well, this one's easy. We got Pat Riley.
All right, that's Pat Riley. Boom.
Can we make an argument for PJ Tucker?
No, because
though?
We don't have that much time, David.
I wanted PJ Tucker's jersey to be retired during the playoffs last year. So no one needs to. Yes, but it's Pat Riley. He created this.
He defines Heat culture. Yeah. I get it. I'm just saying, like, all right. Oh, wait, are we doing all 16 of these?
We're going
to
do this whole first round. We're not just doing Pat Riley and PJ Tucker. That's no fun. We're going to get through all of these.
Why don't we split it? Let's split it. I know we probably should have had this conversation off air, but yeah, I think we're kind of slapped it all together.
Pre-production meeting.
Let's do four brackets right now and then kind of split it over the course of the month.
Our next matchup, Andy Ellisberg versus LeBron James. David, what do you think?
This is a tough one because, you know, Andy Ellisberg, behind the scenes, his name has been, I think, out in the media a lot. There's that picture after the Nikola Jokic incident there that's gone viral. I don't know that a lot of people associate him necessarily as a carrier of Heat culture, but he's been with the team for so long.
Yeah, let's give the brief bio there so people that maybe aren't as locked into what's going on with Andy Ellisberg and the Heat.
They did an Inside the Heat episode of him recently. Like, he was an intern, right? And he had
in the
like
PR department, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Marketing or something.
And he's worked his way up the whole time. Like, he's been a part of it. So, but LeBron James is LeBron James, and he helped secure Miami's winningest era and throughout its whole history. So there's a lot to be said there. But I think my personal argument is that LeBron left because he didn't necessarily appreciate Heat culture, at least the way he perceived it to be, versus Ellisberg, who has worked his way up from the bowels of the American Airlines Arena to become one of the top executives in the front office. Nobody's more cultured than
David. It's the front office version of the Eric Spoelstra story. That's what Andy Ellisberg is. Yeah.
Wrong. David is taking this bracket seriously, huh?
That's all we do.
He's got breakdowns, brother.
Where are you going with this then?
What do you want to say? I'm looking at two names and I'm picking one. Okay. That's what I'm doing. And I'm picking Andy Ellisberg. That's it.
Do I
need to give you an explanation?
Well, if you're picking Andy Ellisberg, who is relatively anonymous to most people who even follow the NBA, even like semi-regularly, you're picking him over the greatest scorer that the NBA has ever seen. I think it does deserve an explanation.
Who's still with the Miami Heat?
It's a good argument. All right. He is a lifer. I'm going into Ellisberg too. And to me, I'm with Rohan, actually. I don't think it's all that close. I really don't.
Do you think Andy Ellisberg would ever be accused of having a smiling face and hidden agenda?
Of course not. I don't know that I've ever seen him smile.
I have.
You've seen Andy Ellisberg smile?
Absolutely.
Brag. All right.
I didn't think that was a bragging part, but yeah.
Goran Dragic versus Ronnie Cicely.
Goran Dragic.
This one's pretty easy, David.
Yeah, I've got to say, I'm sure most of our listeners and viewers probably don't even remember who Ronnie Cicely is.
Oh, come on, really?
Who the hell knows who the spin doctor is?
They talk about him on the broadcast
They talk about him being a goddamn DJ. That's what they talk about. Yeah, okay.
They're like, the talk DJ about guy? Him. Yeah, Heat culture.
Yeah, the Greek rebounder from Sandbar this Syracuse? Weekend? Yeah, exactly. Oh, wow. Wow, that's rough. Sandbar. Man. You see? See, that's the kind of context under which he spoke about. And it's insulting. But no, he was a great player at his time there. But I think the perception there, maybe there was a little bit of anti-European sentiment behind it. But at least from what I remember of those early years of Ronnie Cicely, it was that he was kind of soft, right? And that was the era of the big man, too, the 80s and 90s. And you know, he wasn't necessarily challenging the same way, and he wasn't as physical as all these other guys. So and then he also was traded before Pat Riley even joined the organization, so I don't think you could look to him as being a part of Heat culture, because I don't think there was a Heat culture.
So you're saying I shouldn't even had him on the bracket? That was a miss on my part.
No,
that he shouldn't have even been on the bracket.
Well, you come up with 32 names,
and that Goran Dragic played on one foot in the NBA Finals.
It's Goran Dragic. It's no doubt. Goran Dragic is Heat culture as much as I think he's actually seated too low on this. And I say that as the person who seated everything. But yeah. Goran Dragic this is easy. This is whatever Alabama is doing to whoever they're playing right now. Shaquille O'Neal versus Chris Bosh. This one is kind of interesting. Can I give you the Shaq argument?
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
So my theory on Heat culture, as amorphous and undefinable as it is that every big personality character who has impacted winning in a major way that has come through the Miami Heat organization has taken whatever whatever it is that Pat Riley laid down as the foundational principles of that team and that organization. Every single one of these people came through and changed it and tweaked it just a little bit and changed Heat culture to have it reflect a little bit of their own personality and their own influence and all these kinds of things. And that includes Shaquille O'Neal. Because prior to Shaq, the Heat were not a star place. They were not prior to Shaq, they were not viewed as Star Island on South Beach, Miami. They were viewed as the Pat Riley, you know, Schenectady little thing going on down a new franchise. That's fun. Alonzo Mornington, like all that kind of, like, they didn't win. They had no championships. Shaq comes, delivers them their first championship, and embraces sort of the celebrity of everything. And I don't think that the Heat get LeBron and Chris Bosh and even re-sign Dwayne Wade if not for Shaq arriving in 2006. And I think when we think about Heat culture, we think about, you know, knee pads and blood and most hated team and disgusting team in the league. But a big part of the Miami Heat culture, most too.
Disgusting team in the league.
A big part of the Miami Heat culture is also star power, right?
Isn't that written in Championship Alley somewhere? Most
you know
disgusting
what?
Team
you
in
know
the
what?
League.
Be. Wes has convinced me. I think Wes has convinced me.
Me too. Me too.
I think Shaq pulls
Cinderella?
Off a massive upset.
Oh, the big Shaqarella or something like the big fairy tale. I could just imagine. Yeah, Shaqarella. The Cinderella sleeper. Shaqarella.
I didn't say I was going to vote for Shaq. That's just my argument. I might still go
no,
with Bosh.
Shaq
it was
now.
Convincing,
Shaq
Wes. Like, I don't think you've ever been as convincing about any point.
He's
and it's
right.
Something that I don't
David's
think,
right. It was the first time I wasn't. Yeah. It was the first time I wasn't actively annoyed by Wes. It was,
you're right.
I think, yeah, Shaq wins.
There is no Heat culture without the spotlight that he brought with him from Los Angeles.
So true.
That's the whole thing.
So true.
Yeah.
Wow.
Great job, Wes.
Shaq with the upset.
We end on a positive note. Yeah.
So in the next round, we'll see. So we'll complete the rest of this Schenectady side part of the region on our next episode. But I guess to look forward to the next part of this part of the bracket, we'll have Pat Riley versus Andy Ellsberg. Ooh. Front office drama.
Yeah.
I like that.
The movie Warrior where the two brothers fight each other in the final.
It's just like
that. That's what that is.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's just like that. And then Goran Dragic versus Shaquille O'Neal. That should be
two Phoenix Suns legends. Goran Dragic versus Shaquille
Shaqtus.
O'Neal.
Shaqtus. Yeah. Former teammates. Yeah, that's right.
Shaqtus. All right. Well, that'll do it for us today. Rohan, what else you got going on over at Sports Illustrated? Where can people find you?
Please just go to sportsillustrated.com and read my stories so I can continue to feed my family. I've grown accustomed to a certain lifestyle. I've grown accustomed to a certain lifestyle, so please just Google my name in Sports Illustrated. Click everything that you can, everything that you see. It's much appreciated. But in all seriousness, yeah, SI.com. Yeah, check us out. Check out my NBA podcast, by the way. Mm-hmm. I host it with my NBA podcast. I host it with Chris Herring and Chris Mannix. Subscribe to the Crossover podcast. We have fun on there. I try to call Mannix out for being a part of the Boston media mafia as much as possible. So please check that out.
Who are they going to anoint as defensive player of the year this year?
I'm surprised we haven't seen the Derek White columns yet.
Isn't there like that legendary Republican like thing, like a caucus or something where they basically decide who their next person is going to be?
Talking about that episode of Succession?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Literally what I'm talking about. Episode of Succession where they decide who the president is going to be. That's the Boston media mafia for defensive player of the year.
That's a take I'm going to steal for a tweet, Wes. I'm telling you right now.
You can have it.
Man, oh man, those Boston media mafias. If the Celtics somehow lose before the conference finals, there's going to be a lot of people with hell to pay from my Twitter account. That's all I have to say.
It's always a pleasure having you on. To everybody watching and listening, thanks again for making Lockdown Heat your first listen every day. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Lockdown Heat on your favorite podcast app and on YouTube. You can ring the bell to get notified as soon as new episodes go up. Now make your second listen, Game to Game, NBA, every moment, every top performance, every result. Locked On Game to Game covers every game from across the NBA with local analysis that only Locked On can deliver. Follow Game to Game on Locked On NBA. It's available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts.